inspiring interviews with today's top landlords. This is the Rental Income Podcast. And now, Dan Lane.
My guest on the podcast today is a full-time house flipper. So he buys properties, he fixes them up, and then he sells them for a profit. So that's basically his full-time job. That's how he pays the bills. That's how he puts food on the table. But the way that he's building long-term wealth is by buying rental properties. And what I think is interesting about his story is that he really treats the rentals the same way that he does his flips, from the way that he looks at deals, how he evaluates them. So I think he's got an interesting mindset. And whether you want to flip houses or not, I think you'll get a lot out of the way that he's running his business. So let's take a real quick break. We'll come back in 30 seconds. And we'll meet Bob Warburton from Wilmington, Delaware.
Are you looking for a roadmap to financial freedom? If so, we have a solution for you. Narada Real Estate is offering a limited number of free strategy sessions to help you get out of the rat race. Learn how you can create wealth and build monthly passive income. To set up a time with one of our knowledgeable investment counselors, simply go to naradarealestate.com. That's NORADA realestate.com.
Bob, so how did you first get interested in rental properties?
Well, I've always been interested in real estate. Loved playing Monopoly as a kid. So that was probably one of the first things. But bought my first property out of college and quickly bought a second one on a, I think it was an FHA assumable mortgage. And then I bought a third property where I moved into. So I had two rentals, sold one quickly and kept that other one for years. Was in medical sales for years. So real estate kind of fell on the back burner for a long time and then gradually got back into it. But I really got lured by the sexy fix and flip portion. So I started doing that for years, transitioned into wholesaling, and eventually quit my medical sales job right before the crash. So started my full-time investing in 2006, had a great year 2006, 2007 was good, and then things really got difficult. We spent a lot of time on short sales. But as the market started to rebound, just doing more and more education, I knew I really just had a job and really wanted to build my wealth. So I started to really focus and concentrate on building a rental portfolio for, you know, buy and hold properties.
You've been working on building out your portfolio for a couple of years now. What does your portfolio look like today?
I think 14 properties and 21 doors. I have a fourplex and two triplexes, and the rest are single family residents.
Okay. Is there one that do you like one better than the other, or do you like them both for different reasons?
I'm trying to build a blend. I mean, you know, it depends on what your strategy is. You know, I have some kind of entry level townhouses here on the East Coast, you know, brick townhouses, and they're great for cash flow, but a lot of them are never going to appreciate. I just understand that. And then I have some nicer properties in nicer areas that are maybe won't cash flow as well, but those are looking for, you know, appreciation. Now, obviously, those higher class properties are usually newer. They're going to have less repairs and a little bit easier with tenants. So I have a little bit of a blend. The multi-units is education, because you've got issues between tenants, and now as the landlord, I'm responsible for, you know, lawn care and shoveling snow. And a couple of the units I took over have one heating system, one boiler system. So, you know, that falls on me as the landlord. So there's some challenges on multi-units, but those multi-units have cash flowed by far the best, actually.
You know, a lot of times when people talk about the multi-unit properties, that they don't like buying them because they find that those properties turn over more. Have you found that to be true?
My triplexes are one bedrooms in two of them, but my fourplex are all one bedrooms, my triplex one bedroom, another one are two bedrooms. You know, that's what I've always heard too. I've had really good success. The multi-units I bought and with existing tenants, and I've had pretty good luck. I'd say 75% of them are still there. A year and a half later, on those. So, okay.
Yeah. So tell me about that. So when you buy a property that has a tenant in there already, I guess it can go either way. I mean, you can have a really good tenant, or you can be buying someone else's problem. In your case, it sounds like those inherited tenants have been working out.
Yeah, I've had a couple. Like I said, all the multi-units were fully rented, and I've bought two other single families with tenants. And, you know, we try to treat the tenant as a new prospect. We put them through the same background checks and check their proof of income to make sure that they could qualify. We also want to see the landlord's proof that they are receiving rent. So looking at their rent roll, you know, a bank statement that shows what they're getting for their income. So I've been pretty lucky. I mean, a few have moved out, but no more trouble than single family houses where I've gotten the tenants myself.
So walk me through, like, say for your last multi property that you bought, like, when do you get into that discussion with the seller? Like, do you agree to a price and go under contract and then put in a contingency that you want to check out the tenants? Or are you looking at that up front when you're negotiating for the property?
I usually discuss it with them, but obviously there's a clause, you know, that I want to examine, you know, talk to the tenants. Get their information and ask them to help the tenants comply. And okay. And those tenants are usually super friendly because, you know, they want to stay.
Right.
So usually they're pretty, you know, they'll work with you.
And so everything's checked out on the properties you've bought with tenants, like the numbers matched up to what the seller was saying, and the properties seem to be doing all right.
Yeah, I mean, a few of them were, you know, in the lower properties, slow pay and some issues. But, you know, you make your money on fix and flips and rentals when you buy. Mm-hmm. So those ones we made sure we were looking for a higher rate of return, you know, to offset any issues that came. So,
sure.
You know, okay. The ones that I buy, you know, vacant that need repairs, we look at it in a different way. But it's worked out both ways.
How about doing an inspection? Do you typically do a home inspection when you're buying a property?
You know, I used to not, because when we do fix and flips, I have my partner really handles construction, and we usually know we're doing a full rehab, and we don't. But I've been burned on a couple of the rentals in the past where I've missed some things that an inspection would pick up. And so in the last couple, I have hired a traditional inspector, and we've received with things that have been found after the contract's been signed, I've gotten price reductions. It's more than paid for the cost of doing a termite and a radon and a regular inspection. And you know, we see it when we're selling our fixed and flip properties that it becomes almost a second round of negotiations mm-hmm. after our buyer brings an inspection. So I've kind of taken advantage of that. So we found some things that I would have missed, and there's some things on properties before we didn't get traditional inspections that would have found. So it's you know, build it into the yeah. cost of buying the property.
Yeah, you know, I think that's interesting because I think doing an inspection is a good idea. I always do an inspection before I buy a property, but it seems like a lot of the fix and flip guys that I know, they don't do an inspection. When you're buying a fix and flip, do you do an inspection also, or is it mainly just for your rentals?
Yeah, no, and that's why, because my partner on the fix and flip is not a part of my rental portfolio. I mean, he helps me out in different ways, okay. but he handles that, and because we're – you know, the property's going to be vacant. We're going to be doing usually a full rehab. So any issues that come up, we're going to be dealing with the inspection. Plus, when you're dealing with fix and flip properties, time's more of the essence, and we're looking for an all cash as is, you know, as an incentive. There's a lot of competition. So, you know, the ability to move quickly is more important that way. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're buying a multi-unit, you know, it just seems – or even just traditional rental units with tenants in place – or even not tenants in place, it seems more usual or understanding that you're going to go through the, you know, the inspection, and you're going to check out the tenants and do the due diligence.
Mm-hmm. So Is doing maintenance, do you think it's easier for you than it would be for someone that doesn't do flips? Because I guess you've got a bunch of contractors and people that are working on your flip houses. Are you using the same people then to do the repairs when stuff comes up on the rentals?
Yes, some, and that's one of the benefits is my, you know, is being able to use the contractors we use on some of, you know, some of them for, depends on, especially our HVAC, plumbing and electrical. And I have a partner who also has his own rental portfolio, and I've been able to, he's been able to provide different contractors. If I'm in a pinch and I'm missing somebody, you know, I can always check, hey, do you got a backup electrician or, you know, that both businesses, that is by far the most difficult part is contractors. They come, they go, right. They start off good, they fall out. But I would really recommend getting a good handy person. And we have a husband and wife team that can do, they're jack of all trades and they're dramatically cheaper. You know, they can do, you know, fix a leaky sink or, you know, cut the grass or, you know, do all sorts of little minor things, drywall repair. And, they're much more cost effective mm-hmm. and we keep them running all the time.
So is there any advice that you could give us on how we could find a good contractor?
Going down to Home Depot, one of the first things I ever learned, you want to go down there to the pro desk where they got the coffee and at 7 a.m. And those are the guys you want, talking to the pro desk at Home Depot, who do you recommend? Mm-hmm. If you see people there at 11 p.m. or 11 a.m, you know, unless they're coming back, if they're just getting started at 9 or 10, you know, you want the guys that are at 7. Those right. are the hustlers.
Yeah.
It's a whole lot easier now. I mean, you know, take advantage of local RIAs and network there. I think those are great, great resources.
You know, I think that's really good advice. I was hoping that you weren't going to say look online, because I feel like looking online is not the place to find contractors. Like you're a lot of the best guys that you're going to find are going to be at Home Depot. Like they maybe don't even have a website. Have you found that to be true?
Yeah, so true. I mean, a lot of these guys they're great at their craft, but they're not great marketers. Let's face it.
Right.
You know, if they would be putting on, you know, $20,000 roofs on McMansions, you know, or, you know, stuff like that. I heard early on, you know, you want to find the guy who's good, who's got, you know, insurance and license and good rep, but he's got the pickup truck with a little ding in mm-hmm. the side. You don't want the guy who's got the full page ad in the yellow pages or who's got a, you know, huge, you know, website, because you're going to be paying for his advertising.
Absolutely.
Coming up on the Rental Income Podcast.
Bob has a really interesting strategy that he uses to make offers on rental properties. I want to find out exactly what he's doing, but first I want to thank our sponsor today, MyLandlordHelper.com. If you're self-managing your properties and maybe you're feeling a little bit overwhelmed, or maybe you have a property manager that you're not happy with, you should really check out MyLandlordHelper.com. They can help you self-manage your rental properties. So I'll give you an example of some of the stuff they can do. If a tenant has a problem, maybe something's broken, they need a repair person to come out. Instead of calling you, that person can call My Landlord Helper and they can take care of the problem. Whether you want to go out and fix it yourself or you want them to call a repair person, they can do whatever it is you want. They can also deal with rent collection, making sure the rent's paid. And if it's not paid, they can make follow-up phone calls, send out reminders that the tenant needs to pay rent. When you have a vacancy, they can help getting your listings online. They can help you with screenings. So there's a lot of things that they can do to make your life a lot easier with managing your rental properties. They're offering a free 30-day trial if you want to test drive their service. Just go to MyLandlordHelper.com. You can try it out free. Also, if you want to talk to them and find out more about what they do, maybe answer some questions, they're happy to get on the phone with you. You can make an appointment right there on the website to talk to them, or you can call into their office. Just call MyLandlordHelper.com. All right. Thank you so much for sponsoring the show. I really appreciate it. And let's get back into the interview. So, Bob, tell me, when you're making an offer on a rental property, walk me through exactly what you're doing.
Yes, when I look at a property, I'm looking at it multi, you know, when it comes in, you know, what are we going to do with this property? And, you know, is it going to be a fix and flip or a wholesale or rental? But if I've determined, hey, this is something I want to, and I'm trying to, it's tough, you know, to take, give away that, you know, that big lump sum, but I'm really trying to make sure I keep getting more and more rentals. So I'm offering like a three offer strategy that I've, you know, learned from different people where, the offer number one is our, you know, cash price. And we kind of determine that through the traditional ARV times 0.65 less repairs. And then we also look at it where we are taking the rent, the month, the annual rent, and we basically deduct 40%. You know, that will cover a management fee, vacancies, short-term expenses, long-term expenses. So we, you know, so if you take $1,000 a month, so times 12, that's 12,000. And if you multiply that out times 0.6, so that's taking 40% for expenses. And then you just divide it by what you want your rate of return. So, you know, in higher areas, we're willing to take a 10, 11%. In a little bit lower areas, it might have a little bit more turnover. We're looking for, you know, 13, 14, 15%. And, you know, that will – plugging that in, that'll tell you what your all-in price is. And that includes repairs. That includes your closing costs. And that way it's – when you're presenting it to the seller is, you know, this is what the market's allowing me to pay. You know, I wish I could pay you more. That's offer number one. Offer number two is a seller financing where we're putting down 10% of the purchase price and financing a five-year balloon at 6%, and that's a higher price. And then offer number three is a total owner financing, and that's usually close to market value, what they want, where we're putting down 20% and then taking the balance in 240 equal payments, which averages out to about 20, 21 years. And if they ever ask, we say the interest is kind of built into that. So that way, instead of them, you know, if you just give an offer, they could say no. You know, we try to go in with, you know, which one of these works best. And sometimes it's a hybrid. You know, if they have existing financing, we have looked at, you know, you can look at a subject to situation. But this way, I've gotten much better responses where they're, you know, which one works best as opposed to yes or no.
I love that. I think that's really good because it's not, hey, here's, I'm going to offer you $100,000, yes or no. You're giving them options and people love choices. So I think that's really good. Do you present the offer to them when you meet them at the house for the first time, or will you walk the house and then say, I'll get back to you with an offer?
You know, in both of my businesses, I really feel that, you know, in person, belly to belly is the way to go because, you know, we really like to build rapport. I'll know usually before I go out, I'll do my research, run my comps, and I'll know which route I want to go. Is it going to be a rental or is it going to be a fix and flip or a wholesale deal? So I kind of have that all pre-planned. You know, we'll make offers on the spot. Usually for a rental, I want to go back in and, you know, do diligence and then I'll email that. I've done it both ways, but I find I get much better response if I can present an offer in person. Mm-hmm. If you've taken the time and built a rapport and try to find out do they really want, you know,
right.
What are they looking to do? You know, what are they going to do with the money? And then that way we can try to solve their problems. But we have much better responses in person as opposed to sending an email or mailing an offer and it just sits in their inbox or sits on their, you know, their table for a month.
So how do you present it to them? So if say you're looking at buying my house, do you write down the offer or would you say it to me verbally?
Well, if it's the multi-offer strategy, it's like a three-offer letter, and it's just really simple explaining, you know, offer number one, this is your all-cash price, and, you know, and then offer number two, it just says, you know, basically what it is, and then offer number three, and then, you know, which one will work for you, let us know, and then, you know, bottom paragraph says, you know, we can, once you choose your which offer you want, we'll execute and write up a purchase and sale agreement.
Okay. And do you find that there's one that people take more often, or does it really just depend on the seller's situation?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of our deals are inheritance, so more than likely it's multiple people. If it's a traditional, you know, mom or dad has passed away and, you know, there's two or three kids and I'm usually dealing with the executor or executrix of the estate, that's a little difficult. I mean, I always present it. You never know. Don't assume. Just present all your offers and see what, you know, they say. But usually when there's multiple owners that are, you know, related but not, you know, husband and wife, they usually want to get cash. Nobody, you know, brother and sisters don't want to, you know, be seller financing usually. So most people take cash, but at least I could, you know, you wanted 100 grand. Here's how I can give you 100 grand. But if you want the cash now, this is, you know, how we can get you, you know, at this dollar amount. Right.
Are most people that take the cash offer, are they trying to get out like right away? Do they want a quick closing?
Yeah, and again, a lot of our deals are estates. It just seems to be, you know, okay, the ultimate motivated seller. And it depends. Some of them will say, you know, we'll talk to them and they'll tell me, you know, hey, you know, I live in Chicago, my sister lives in Atlanta, and if we never go back home again, that's great. I never want to go back there. You know, they don't have any attachment, and they're, you know, I'll say, well, when would you like to close? And they'll say yesterday. You know, and then some people, it's a really difficult situation to lose a loved one, obviously, and they need time. You know, they'll contact us and they say they aren't ready, so the follow-up's important. But then they'll just say, listen, we need to go through the items, and they're taking their time and they're reminiscing and they're, you know, they're dealing with the process. So some will say we need a month or 2 months.
Okay. Yeah.
But we can always close on the date of your choice. That's the nice part about being an investor. I'm not buying to move into it. Right. We can close when it works for you.
Yeah, I just think that's such a great strategy. I love giving three offers. And I also love that you're approaching your rentals like it's a flip almost. Like, you know, offering the ARV times 0.65. I mean, that's I feel like a lot of times rental owners aren't pushing as hard to get the to get a good deal like a house flipper would be. And I love that you're really taking your house flipping and using that same philosophy towards buying rentals.
Well, sometimes, and I think those are the best deals, is it's nice that I have that experience. We're not buying, I never buy any single family off the MLS. It's always through our, you know, direct marketing. So, you know, if I've got the experience with doing a renovation, so what I kind of do is renovate the property and wholesale to myself, in essence. Mm-hmm. You know, so we'll if we're doing those deals, that's where we can force appreciation and force equity, you know, where we're going to do a rehab. Now, obviously, we're not going to do – you want to know your exit strategy. We're not doing a flip rehab. We're doing a rental rehab. And then, you know, we'll pay cash and then we'll finance the rehab, put a tenant in place, and then we'll go back and refinance and try to cash out as much as we can, 70 to 80%.
Right. So then when you're done with the refi, if you've done it right, you have all your money back. So you should have 100% financing on the property.
Absolutely. And I think if you're going to do it that way, you want to treat it almost like a flip, because your offer will be usually lower than what I find is what I would accept for just a traditional rental.
Right.
I mean, if it's got tenants in place and it's in, you know, really good shape and I really don't have to do anything, obviously I'd be willing to pay more money because there's going to be less headache. But if this place is vacant and I can see the sunlight coming through the roof and it needs a heater and, you know, I need to be compensated because it's going to be a full rehab.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it depends on which way you want to go.
Yeah. Well, Bobby, you've got a great business, and I thank you for coming on and sharing all this insight with us. If someone wants to reach out to you, what's the best way for someone to find you online?
You could check out our flipping and wholesaling company. It's usahousesolutions.com. That's solutions with an S, and that's our front end of our fixing and flipping business. And it's been great. Thanks for asking me on. I'm a big fan of your podcast.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it. If you missed Bob's contact information and you want to look it up, you can find it at rentalincomepodcast.com/episode150. Thank you so much for subscribing to the podcast, and we'll be back with a new episode next Tuesday. My name is Dan Lane, and this has been the Rental Income Podcast.